Welcome to The Warcast, your geopolitical briefing that tells you what you need to know, when you need to know it. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only. Spread the word and tell your friends and colleagues to sign up at warontherocks.com/subscribe.
The Ethiopian Prime Minister announced last week that the government was going to release all political prisoners and close a notorious detention center. The move was unexpected, as Ethiopia has never previously admitted to holding political prisoners. While the announcement has been warmly received in many quarters, questions abound, such as which prisoners will be considered political and when they'll actually be released. I'm speaking with Kelsey Lilly, Associate Director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council. So thank you for joining us, Kelsey.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. What can you tell us about who these political prisoners are and how many of them are there?
Sure. So last week, essentially, the prime minister, as you said, announced that he was going to release political prisoners. And this is a big deal because people for, you know, years have been saying that this would be kind of a conciliatory move by the Ethiopian ruling party. Political prisoners in Ethiopia is this kind of moniker that means all sorts of things. It means people that many times are journalists, they're activists, they have kind of crossed the government in some way. Part of the trouble of kind of reporting on and analyzing Ethiopia is that we don't have a lot of information. The media environment is incredibly restrictive, and so we are forced to look at, you know, formal channels, the prime minister's office and things like that. So we don't have kind of an accurate reporting of how many political prisoners there are. What we do know is in this 10-month state of emergency that existed last year, so between 2016 and 2017, there were more than, you know, tens of thousands of people arrested. And then at the end of the year, 9,000, 10,000 were released. So that sort of gives you a sense of the scale of people who could be held. And what we would love to know, and what analysts would love to know, is, you know, how many people could be released. But certainly we're talking about a really large scale.
And this includes, I assume, or I've read, like reporters and opposition party members as well?
Absolutely. So everyone from, you know, really famous journalist Eskinder Nega, people who have been jailed under the guise of really restrictive counterterrorism legislation, and people that were really the head of really legitimate opposition parties. So people like Dr. Bekele Gerba, Dr. Merera Gudina, people that ran sort of opposition parties that people looked at and they really respected in Ethiopia. And so the question now, looking at the prime minister's statement, is are these politicians who happen to be jailed? Are these political prisoners? Were they jailed for a real crime, or were they jailed for kind of crossing the government in some way?
The prime minister also singled out the, and I'm going to attempt to pronounce this correctly, the Maklawi Detention Center in Addis Ababa as being particularly notorious. Like, what's so important about this one facility?
So Maklawi is notorious, as are a couple of other prisons in Ethiopia, for where kind of real, really terrible things happen to the prisoners there. So this is a place that Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have documented multiple cases of torture, of mistreatment, in some cases of kind of mysterious deaths happening and not being able to account for them. And so, you know, should this prison close, it's certainly a very symbolic win. But what I would say is that the justification for why that prison is closing is very important. The prime minister has not said we're closing Maklawi because we know that that is where many prominent political prisoners are held in Ethiopia because of the misconduct by our security forces that has happened there. He's attributed it actually to decades ago and mistreatment by the former Ethiopian regime, the Derg. And so he wants to turn that the prison into a museum. And there are a number of such museums in Ethiopia that kind of talk about this really dark period of the Derg ruling party and thousands and thousands of people that died in the purges there. So I think the justification is important there as well. You know, it would certainly be good to close the prison, but what happens to the people that are there? If they just get shuffled to other secretive prisons where, you know, misconduct and torture still happens, that is sort of less progress than what a real closure and kind of accountability would mean.
Yeah, because it sounds like it's just closing the facility and turning it into a museum. But, you know, there are the individuals of the security services who have been perpetrating the crimes
exactly
at the prison. So is there any discussion of what's going to happen to them? Are they just going to be moved to a different prison and, you know, effectively allowed to continue doing what they've been doing?
Right. So there hasn't been much. And I think this is the really underlying difficult question for the Ethiopian government. And they have really rightly kind of come to this understanding that a lot of the unrest that has happened in the country over the past 4 or 5 years is due to dissatisfaction with the ruling party, with kind of economic disparity, with ethnic disparity. And so the question is not just, will any of these things happen? And I think although they may be symbolic, there's plenty of questions about what timeline, what scale, is there really the kind of political will to do any of these things? And the question is about accountability. And it's about sort of the long-term sustainable kind of pressure release that's really needed in Ethiopia. And so what we've seen in the past on things like anti-corruption drives is that a lot of times the Ethiopian government will come out and they say, we're really serious about this. We understand the opposition's concerns and young people's concerns. But instead of kind of taking it to the very top of the government and to these people who have embezzled or, you know, committed some of these atrocities, they sort of target a mid-level. And so maybe there are some arrests. A lot of times, instead of arrests, there are actually just moves. So people are shifted from, in this case, you know, one government agency to another. But there's not real accountability. And so I think that is the challenge. If this government is serious, how do you show that to people? You have to follow through. So on both of these proclamations, on this idea of releasing some prisoners and of closing the prison, you know, is there follow through and does it happen in a timely fashion?
Do you suspect that they'll actually release all political prisoners, or will it be more likely to be a more narrowly defined population of people who are considered political prisoners?
So if this happens, and I will say that I'm skeptical, I think it will be very, very narrowly defined. And you sort of see that kind of almost conflict in the ruling party that happened just a day after they made this big announcement. On the 4th of January, they came out and said, actually, there was a mistranslation in the official statement. You know, the prime minister didn't say political prisoners. He said, you know, political leaders whose crimes had resulted in convictions. So that's a really, that kind of distinction in language. And of course, we're dealing with translation here, but that's really significant. And so if he really means kind of political leaders who happen to have also been convicted of crimes, you know, that sort of distances the government from what people are really hoping for, which is one, you know, saying, yes, there are political prisoners in Ethiopia, and then kind of figuring out how to deal with them. So kind of given that sort of the backing away from that statement, and we could have a separate conversation about whether the translation was correct in the first place. You know, so given that, I am skeptical that it will happen, but I think at the same time, the government understands that this unrest that has happened, and really, I mean, you can go back to 2014 and see sort of the roots of, you know, students being out in the streets and saying, you know, this economy is not working for everyone. There is, you know, effectively ethnic segregation in some parts of the country. There's discrimination against the Oromo and the Amhara, and there are kind of religious fault lines here as well. You can go all the way back to 2014 and even before and see people's dissatisfaction. So the government has very rightly said, okay, we see that this is an issue. We hear your concerns. And should they kind of make good on some of the things that they have promised to do in the past week, that's a really good start, and that's how you sort of start to build trust. But until the follow-through happens, I think most people will remain kind of somewhat skeptical.
Assuming that they are going to do this and in mostly good faith, you know, what do you think this means more broadly to the Ethiopian government? I mean, is this a shift towards reconciliation with otherwise repressed groups within the country? Are there more specific reasons for the prime minister doing this? Foreign relations? You know, how do we get more insight into the Ethiopian government, assuming that they're actually going to do this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the biggest point I can make is that it's really hard to tell what's going on. And part of that is because, again, the media environment is so incredibly restrictive. It's really hard to find out, you know, what are people thinking? Social media gets shut down, the internet gets shut down. So it's hard to hear from regular Ethiopians themselves. And so we're sort of left, you know, here in the West and in the US to kind of speculate. But what kind of my read is that The ruling party, which is this sort of coalition of four mostly ethnically aligned parties, it's come under a lot of pressure in the past year or 2 years. And so this party has predominantly been sort of run from the TPLF, which is this the political party that's based in the north of the country. They have usually had all the power. Usually the prime minister comes from that party. They have sort of been the kingmakers in Ethiopia. And now what we're seeing is sort of fissures inside the ruling party. It's not quite as monolithic as a lot of people thought. And there are pressures from inside to reform, for more freedoms. And those are coming especially from kind of groups that have traditionally been certainly bigger in number, but more marginalized. And so the question really is not what's happening kind of on the fringes of Ethiopia in the opposition parties or with activists, but what's happening in the ruling party itself. And so this statement on January 3rd about political prisoners and about the prison came after kind of these weeks of deliberations inside the ruling party. So if the prime minister is getting real pressure and acting on it, which it seems like he has, that is potentially a positive sign of kind of the pressure that from inside to reform some of these other groups can bring to bear.